Welcome to a special edition of the KSL Sports Front Page, brought to you by University Federal Credit Union. We're doing one of these look back in time in Utah football history. I'm your host, Trevor Allen, and I am joined by a bunch of star Utes here on this chat. We're going back in time to 2015, when Utah went all the way up to number 3 and then ended up playing BYU in the Las Vegas Bowl. So we'll go ahead and just get started right away, bringing in players from that team. We will start with the quarterback. He was a senior back in 2015, Travis Wilson. Travis, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing good. And then we'll bring in the guy who he would throw to, Kenneth Scott, wide receiver, Batman, and now rapper, Kenneth Scott. Hey, man, how are you?
I'm doing good. How's everything on your end?
Everything is good. All right. And then we will bring in a guy who would help block. He was one of the greatest O-linemen in Utah football history. I'm willing to say that. And now he is a police officer protecting the community in Provo, Isaac Asiata. Officer Isaac Asiata. How are you, man?
Good, man. How are you
doing? Doing good. And then everybody's favorite Aussie, everyone's favorite punter, two-time Ray Guy Award winner, and my colleague, Tom Can't Hack It. Tom, how are you, man?
T-Bone Steak, I'm doing well. How are you holding up, Big Mac?
I didn't think we were going to go to that.
All-century. Can't forget about the All-Century.
Oh, yeah.
All-Century team.
All right, hold on, back up. All right, Pac-12 All-Century team member, yes. Tom Hackett. I'm sorry, Tom. I really should always think about that, but that's the one award you always hang your hat on. All right, guys, so just looking back, as you guys look at that season, almost 5 years ago, you guys look at training camp. We're just going to start there. When did you guys think that this team was going to be really good? I want to start with Isaac on that answer.
Tom, that was the year that your moped got stolen, huh?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that's when I knew, man. I knew it was going to be a funky year. I had to ride to practice with Tom. Your car got stolen, right?
The car got stolen.
The moped saved us, Isaac.
Yeah. Basil got stolen. Tom's car got stolen. Me, Tom, and Travis were roommates at the time. Tom's car got stolen, which is what I was barely fitting and driving around. I had to ride on the back of this little, maybe like 250cc moped Tom to the opening morning for training camp. And that's when I knew everything was going to be amazing that year.
All right. Travis, when did you think this Utah football team was going to have a really good year?
I mean, I think it's a pure coming off of, like, our junior year. I think a lot of us had obviously been playing together for a few years now. You know, we built a lot of momentum going into our senior year and everything like that. And obviously, we had a few rough couple of first years, you know, just adjusting to the Pac-12 and everything like that. But, yeah, I think just leading up, like, winter conditioning, like summer and going into fall camp, like everyone, we were all super close and everyone had, you know, everyone had the same goal in mind and, you know, everyone just wanted to achieve the same things. And, you know, just that kind of that showed and our leadership really stepped up and became a good focal point for the rest of that season.
All right. Tom Hackett, thoughts on when you guys thought that was going to be a special season? I knew that you had a really good year, but when did you think the team as a whole was going to have a really special year?
I was still trying to figure out the game of football in 2015, and I still am. So I didn't really know, Trev, but I did know that we had our first winning year, like Trav was saying, in 2014. And so I thought that was worth something. And then we had a fair few seniors as well. I know we don't have anybody on the defensive side of the ball on this feed, but we had a number of seniors on the defensive side as well. And generally speaking, when you're an experienced group, your chances of doing better do go higher and they do increase. So I'm optimistic. You never know, though. I mean, at the end of the day, it's college football, and a lot of the guys on the team and a lot of the guys we play, obviously, you know, just young adults. And so every given week you've got to show up, and sometimes you don't, and that's the reality of college football. But I was optimistic going into 2015, specifically because 2014 was our first winning season since I had been there. 2012 and 2013, we both went 5-7.
All right, yeah. Kenneth, same for you.
Man, for me, it's, you know, obviously the senior leadership that we had leading up to years, but The one thing that I knew, I'll tell you this part. One thing I knew, when they said we was gonna be on the drive, I said, "Oh yeah, we're about to get on this. It's either we gonna suck or we gonna be really, really good." And since they had Oregon State at that time, I knew they was gonna handle the sucky part. So I knew we really only option was to be good. So that's how I knew. I figured, I said, "Okay, this must be a good year. It's one of them omens that okay, they're gonna record everything and we're gonna have a breakout year." So that's where I was optimistic at.
I completely forgot about the drive. Do you guys remember when we went to the haunted house?
Yeah.
The haunted house.
Ooh. Wait, haunted house? Tom, yeah. Elaborate, yeah, please.
The haunted house. And they mic'd me up. And midway through, they pulled me out of the haunted house because my microphone couldn't stick to my chest because I was dripping in sweat. It was horrible. I'm like, mic up, K. Scott. He screams louder than any of them.
Hey, I was getting ready to fight everybody. Like, if I'm scared, I'm trying to fight somebody.
There were some stories about that. I mean, what about camp? I know that people have stories about camp and how, you know, teams come together during camp, and you know, it's also a really hard time because you guys are getting ready for the year. What were some training camp stories that you guys were going through? I mean, obviously, Tom, when did your car get stolen?
Isaac went.
Tom's the night before our first practice. Do you remember that? Because we were freaking out because we were going to be late to the first practice at camp, and everybody was going to have to run gases. But everybody ended up running gases anyway because we were on the drive. And that was the worst. That was the worst training camp of my Utah football career ever. And I blamed the drive 150% because when the cameras are on in practice, you have to basically do everything for the cameras. It sucked. We ran like 28 to 25 gassers at the end of a 2.5 hour practice, like about 3 or 4 times that month. I was
I'm just happy we weren't doing the 32 periods anymore. We actually slimmed it down to like 18 periods. I remember like our freshman year, we were getting up there to like 28 periods, and those were some long days.
And then you restart the whole practice.
Yeah, and then you'd hear Coach Witt. You'd start messing up, and you'd hear Coach Witt, "Start the period over." You're like, "God,
clock off." And then we'd just keep rolling. Oh, man.
So you guys opened up against Michigan. That was the debut of Jim Harbaugh. How fired up were you guys to open up against Michigan at home?
That was lit.
Yeah. It was amazing. I mean, just like obviously, going there and playing them in the Big House our junior year and being able to win that game was awesome. And then, obviously, having them come to ours and, yeah, having it be Jim Harbaugh's first college game back. And, you know, that was definitely a sweet victory to kind of take away his first win back in college. So that was awesome.
Yeah, and everything surrounding that game, man, everybody said, "Oh, yeah, Jim Harbaugh, he's going to go to Utah and he's going to smash Utah." And
the cupcake.
Yeah, the cupcake. That was the cupcake game. Cupcakes. We all had cupcakes. It was the greatest. But that was huge from a team standpoint. I know us as a whole line, it was a big challenge because these guys were supposed to be like elite defensive linemen. And the five of us, we handled them really well. It was a fun game to play.
How would you guys say the, you know, crowd was there? I mean, you guys obviously played in a lot of openers at home, you know, seeing that stadium rocking. Was that about as loud as you guys have heard it when you guys were playing at Utah?
Yeah, it was pretty electric, man.
Yeah. It was an
attack. That was as loud as I can remember.
Yeah, and so, the only time it's ever been louder is like when we played PDS. Really?
Yeah.
Now, I remember, dude, the whole stadium would be freaking shaking when we play them. Every game we had was always packed. Like, I definitely always gave credit to our fans, and they would sell that thing out. So,
by the way, for those of you tuning in, if you don't know why Travis used the word TDS, that is Team Down South, and which means BYU, which means it sounds like he's still not using the word BYU.
I don't ever say the other term, so
yeah, and there's also some other people who don't either.
Yeah, I'm gonna be seeing PDS for the rest of my life.
Were you guys, what were you guys' thoughts? Because you know, going into that year, we knew that series was again gonna take a hiatus. You guys already didn't play in the year before because of that home and home with Michigan, But at that time, I mean, yeah, you guys ended up playing BYU later on, but you guys didn't know that until after the season. So what were your thoughts of not playing BYU and rather playing Michigan?
Go ahead. It was probably a good break for them because they're probably tired of like whooping on them every year. So if anything, it was a break for them.
Yeah.
Kenneth Scott?
I think the players would take Michigan over BYU every year. And I'm not just saying that to try and offend BYU. I just think it's a bigger game. And I think if it was Michigan, Clemson, Bama, Ohio State, you know, like the top of the top in college football, I think Utah would take those teams over BYU every year. It's a bigger game.
Yeah, it's tough because you got people that are from Utah, you know, and that's like, for me, it's like USC versus UCLA. Like, some people from Utah, hey, that BYU game is like their championship. Like, no matter if we play, USC or Michigan. So I think it's like, it's both, you know. But for me, I'm taking Michigan. I'm taking Michigan.
Yeah, I'll take Michigan every single day of the week. But there's nothing like the rivalry game. It'd be funner if it was more challenging, but.
Yeah, it would be way more fun if it was more challenging. Yeah.
Obviously, I know me and Case Con, Tom can attest to this. Like, obviously, growing up outside of Utah, we didn't realize how big the rivalry was until we actually got here. Mm-hmm. Actually, like, playing in that game and, like, experiencing that, like, it's definitely a different game than most games. But it was cool to change it up and obviously play a team like Michigan because that was an awesome experience, especially going out there and playing out there in Michigan. So
I don't know why we can't play Michigan and BYU in the same non-conference. I know it's hard. Mm. It's tricky. It's an emotional game, the BYU game, and it's physical for some, you know, not for me. But I don't know why we can't play Michigan and BYU in the same non-conference schedule. But Coach Witt seems to – his philosophy is it's BYU or a Power 5 team and then, you know, a group of five and then an FCS, FBS, whatever it is. But I'd like to see Flashback it go
Friday.
Michigan, BYU, and then, I don't know, Weber State or something.
Time out, I'm sorry. Tom said FBF.
I don't know what they call
FBS. FBS, football, bowl, subdivision or something like that. All I know is that is higher. FCS is what Weber State, Southern Utah, the Big Sky is in. And that was your guys' C-level game if you guys were going off of what Dr. Chris Hill, his scheduling strategy. Now, moving forward, and I'm really excited about this game because something a little bit personal, and Tom knows this. I ended up telling Kenneth Scott before hopping onto this. So when you guys played Oregon, up at Autzen Stadium, they were ranked top 15. You guys were ranked number 18 going up there. Pretty good team in Oregon. What happened on that day, that was the very first day of my son's life. And so his first college football game was watching you guys smash Oregon.
Mm.
So
I want to dive into that game. That story, Trev, the real truth behind that story is your wife was in the midst of labor giving birth, watching the game, and not by her side, man.
I was by her side while I was watching the TV. But no, he was actually born at like midnight Saturday. And so it was like 12, you know, whenever the game was. It was, you know, obviously later at night. But just talk about that game going in. Isaac, I want to start with you. Going into that game, two top 20 teams. Obviously, you guys were on the road. What were you guys' thoughts going into that Oregon game?
Damn, dude. I knew we were going to win that game from the start of our pregame warmups. And I've said that before, but I don't think I've played in another game like that since that game, just because I knew from the minute we got off the bus to how the locker room was, to just our U formation stretch. They played that one. You remember that one song they played? You remember what song I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
That was probably the worst decision that stadium decided to do because everybody was kind of just vibing mellow. Mm-hmm. And it was just that focus and everybody was just trying to get there in the right mindset. But when that song came on, everybody looked at each other. Then we did the Utah Muley. it was over, man. Like that song came on, and then you could see it. It was over, you know. And just from the jump, man, that was it was crazy. And Travis went off that.
That was the Heisman. Remember they was giving Travis the Heisman nod stuff.
Yeah.
Before that game, so I was like, "Ooh, that's gonna be lit."
Man, that yeah, with just everything leading up to that game, and that's when Coach Witt told us. That's when we he said that we weren't giant players anymore, and we were the Giants, and that was smooth, man. That was a fun time.
I contribute everything to the Travis Heisman thing because ever since then, before that game, I remember Coach Rod coming up and was like, we're going to throw the ball a lot this game. I said, oh, yeah. And I contributed all to the Heisman thing because I think we were trying to boost up Travis. And that boy came out. Hey, I watched that game. I said, God dang, Travis. That boy, man.
Travis went off, man.
Hey, off. He went off. If you sit out the rest of the game, if you only play three quarters in the game against Oregon, only three quarters, not even the full three quarters. Travis only played two minutes of a quarter. Yeah. If you play that much, come on, man, that's legendary. Like against Oregon, come on, man.
So Travis, you were obviously feeling it, and it obviously seemed like you guys opened up the playbook as well because you know Devontae Booker throwing to Britton Covey, Caleb mm-hmm. Rep was getting involved, Kenneth Scott was getting involved. It seemed like you were just throwing darts.
Yeah, honestly, like I everything was just clicking that game. It felt so good. And obviously that was my game back after I hurt my shoulder because I didn't play in the Fresno State game. So that was the game I actually came back and I had to get a shot in my shoulder before the game. So what a lot of people don't know is my shoulder was like I barely had control of like my left shoulder. Like my shoulder was completely numb. It's funny, you could actually see like in going back and watching the game early on in the game when I was running and stuff like that, my arm is actually like hitting my back because I couldn't really control it. But yeah, like I said, everything was just clicking that game. Like I was just throwing fades up to Case Kai. I remember we ran like the same play twice in a row and I was like, hey, I'm going back to him again. So, so we like I said, we had a good game plan going into that game, and we knew how we wanted to attack them, and I knew kind of where to put the ball and you know what guys to go after. So like I said, everything was just clicking, and we were able to really open up the playbook, which I really liked, and definitely had a great impact on the game.
I remember asking Trav. Trav, Isaac, and myself all lived together. I remember asking Trav that week, I was like, how are we going to do this week against Oregon? And this is like the only time Travis has really ever said this, but he's like, I think we're going to kill him. And I was like, what? Really? In Eugene, we're going to kill him? And he's like, and I'm like, well, okay, explain, please. And he went on to say, and Case Scott, you can talk about this too. They their DBs were like all freshmen or true freshmen, right? And that played a big part.
Yeah, and that's another key. They was talking about when Coach Stubblefield came into the office, well, in our meeting room, he was like, "All right, this is gonna be one of those games. It's how our wide receivers are gonna do against their DBs." And Kay Scott, I don't know about you, but you're going to get some lower. Not lower level, but, you know, guys that are not as experienced as you. And so we're going to see how it is. The game is going to be up to you guys and you guys' hands. And I was like, okay, so we kind of took that challenge. Like, all right, sounds good. Let's get in this work. And so,
they definitely had some injuries and stuff going into that game. And like I said, our game plan was to attack that and go after that. And like I said, we took full advantage of that. So we knew where the opportunities were going to be and, you know, we made plays, and like I said, it was clicking, and the whole playbook was open at that point. So,
who was that quarterback? What was his name?
Vernon Adams.
Vernon Adams.
Yep.
He was the transfer, I think, from what Eastern Washington.
He stunk it up that game, huh?
What?
It looked like the whole Oregon team did.
Yeah, all credit to our defense too. Our defense freaking lit him up at the beginning. He ended up having to leave the game because he just ended up getting hurt or whatever. So, like I said, all credit to our defense too. Our defense played lights out, and you know, truly, like all three phases of that game, offense, defense, and special teams just were with everything.
Okay, guys, we're going to have a little bit of fun here. I'm going to ask Tom Hackett to not talk during this next portion. And I'm literally going to turn this over to Isaac, Kenneth Scott, and Travis Wilson. We're going to have a little fun here. All right. I'm pulling up a screen here. Okay. First, can you guys guess what is going to happen here in this play?
He was going to run out of breath. I know that.
Hey, Tom's gonna make the most athletic play he's ever made in his whole entire life.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm literally just gonna press play. You guys break down the entire play, and I can play it a couple of times if you want. All right,
Before you press play, pause it. Okay, just a little backstory for the shield. Okay, that's Jackson Barton right there. I believe is that Nawa?
Yeah,
no, Kowski. And then you're over here, Isaac, right?
Okay, so we talked to Hiva, and Hiva said, he's like, hey, it's there. He said, it's there. He was telling Tom, Tom probably knows, but Hiva was telling Tom, hey, it's there. Told Coach Witt, it's there. And so apparently Hiva called it, but I mean, I thought it was more Tom just wasn't tall enough to catch the snap, but go ahead.
I'm not tall.
You're not allowed to talk, Tommy.
I'll explain what happened after you guys get
there. Okay, yeah, so wait, go back a little bit.
Go back.
Okay.
So just go back at the catch, because this is honestly the most athletic play that Tom has ever made. Look at that.
Tom, can you jump? Okay, Tom, I'm only going to allow you to answer this one question. Have you ever jumped this high in your life?
No.
But – look at that vertical.
I know.
Man, I thought that guy alone was going to get me drafted, and it didn't.
Hey, real talk, though. That's crazy.
Okay. This catch was actually very impressive.
Okay. All right. So now Tom catches it.
After this, it's just, I don't know, his running style is just something else.
And I'm running like a duck. Jimmy.
Dude, if penguins could run, that's legit.
Look at him shut his cup.
Bro, the worst part is that Tom outruns all of his blockers. Like, he was right here in front of him. He doesn't follow. He almost fell off balance.
Try to run him over, Tom.
Okay, something that pointed out to me here. Tom ends up going past his blocks. And then right here, tries to juke the guy right here.
That's like a little guy, hit the whole thing.
Yeah, like, whoop.
Tom, did you – okay, well, if you go to the left of Kiva, you 100% are going home all the way to the end zone. Maybe if you're
Tom didn't want to score.
No, Tom was not a winner in this game. Look at this. Look at this hole. Go out to the Kiva.
No, I think 46 probably would have gotten from the back.
But. Yeah, you're right.
I wish we tried to run him over. No breakaway
kick. That just let the offense come back on the field. So,
Here's what happened. This was the second punt. The first punt, I'm like, man, I didn't hit that very well, and it didn't go very far. And I remember I had a punt earlier, and it went a long way. And I thought it hit the wire, the TV wire, the sky cam. And so I go over to Twitter, and I go, hey, I think that hit the wire. He goes, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah. And you know how he is with timeouts. And so he calls a timeout. When he calls a timeout, I just what myself, because I'm like, if that didn't hit the wire, we just wasted the timeout. Anyway, it turns out it hit the wire. He goes, okay, hit the wire. We're going to run the fake. And anytime he says, we're running a fake, man, I am so scared. I am so scared. Like, I'm like 5'11 and 3/4. Call me 6 foot if you want. 200 pounds, and I look up and I got like 300-pound dudes in front of me trying to take my head off. And I tell Hiva, I'm like, Hiva, I need you to run as fast as you can run. You gotta run quick. And Noah Kowski, you remember Noah Kowski?
Oh, dude? My Michelin man.
Spit coming out his mouth. He had like, you know, like acne all over his face. He's like, I got you. I'm like, all right, Noah, let's go, big boy.
Hey, Noah has a six-pack now, so.
No way.
Yeah, bro.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, keep going.
Jesus. Him and Heaven, man, they shed some weight. But I got a lot of stick for that shimmy I tried to put on the returner. Hey, I kind of beat him, though.
Yeah, kind of.
He did have to arm. He did have to arm tackle.
Arm tackle. Yeah. I've been to Tom, if you ask me. Hey, can we watch that one more time, Trev?
Yes, absolutely. We can watch it as many times as you want, Tom.
Ooh. And then, all right. So, what happened was?
Hey, that's like a 4.3 speed right there.
That's a 4.9. All right. Now, if you keep watching, Jared Norris, he runs off and he whacked me. Bang. Dude, I couldn't see for like 10 seconds.
Yeah, Tom should have been in the protocol right after that.
Tom, Christian Drew said that Mitch Wishnowski has a better 40 time than you, but your game speed is second to none.
I like that from Drew's, man. I owe Drew some money for that comment. That's nice of him. Mitch runs like a 4.4 or something. I ran a 4.91. But I'm telling you, Jared Norris can fuck me up at that point.
Did you end up punting anymore after that?
I don't know if I did. Probably
not. Yeah.
Because
you probably lost your memory because Jared hit you in the head.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you, I'm not kidding. I think I was concussed. And I think that part of my problem right now, I say things without thinking about it, and I blame Jared because he knocked me out after I made a hell of a play.
Okay, pointing this out right here. Awesome. Right here.
Man. I was literally.
You guys probably saw a lot of this, right?
Oh, yeah, dude. They, because they had some ballers on defense, man. They had.
There was a bunch of clips in that game where they just looked so defeated. It was the best feeling in the world.
Isaac, that defensive line was nasty, man.
Yeah, they had Depot. They had another big,
They had Armstrong. They had.
Eric Armstead. Yeah, that's it. Defoe and Eric Armstead. Eric Armstead.
That guy can ball.
Bro,
they were both like 6'7", 6'8". I'm like, yeah, Jesus.
This game was my first like big offensive line performance game. Our old line this game, it was amazing to see them go and ball out against the kind of dudes that they had. Because all those guys were first rounders, man. And, it was so fun to play.
So he catches it right there. Now, thing is, okay, as you guys are seeing Tom not only make that catch, because I'm taking it Isaac, Kenneth Scott, and Travis Wilson, you guys were all on the sideline, right?
Yeah. I didn't know.
As soon as you guys see that, and him just taking off, or what was it, 33 yards, Tom?
Give or take.
I mean, that would actually be perfect because of your number, but, I mean, Travis, you guys think you guys are done for a little bit.
I don't even think I knew that they were going to be running the tape, and then I just look up either. And Tom's freaking just.
And back on the field.
And yeah, all you hear is offense. I'm like, oh, we're back on.
I was on the sideline talking to Coach Harding, asking him if I could be done for the game. I was like, I don't want to play anymore. I'm done. We're winning. We won. This game's over. You can put in a back because we wanted our backups, man. We wanted all the twos to get some reps. Like,
I mean, check out the score.
Oh yeah, I was ready to have our backups go in. Like, who was there? Kyle Lannerman, Nowkowski. I was ready. I remember I was talking to him on the sideline about it, and then the next thing I know, everybody's screaming on our sideline. Stand up and see what Travis described as this from the back.
It looked like this. Hey, that's why Colin McGregor got his little wolf wrong, dog.
He needs to pay you.
Because, I mean, look at this. He's all just like strutting. I mean, look at that. As soon as he comes off the field.
Oh, yeah. Tom was definitely feeling himself.
Oh, man.
And you know what? Tom very well should. I mean, look at that.
That was a highlight play.
Like I said, that was the most athletic play of Tom's career for sure.
I did say I was getting drafted on that play, man.
Man, for real.
You should have got drafted, Tom.
And then Trav had SportsCenter call after the game, and I'm like watching ESPN in our basement, and I'm like, is that bloody giraffe on the? I'm like, where? I'm like looking around, like, where is this big? Where is he? And he's on the phone of SportsCenter. Scott Barrett.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
I was somebody.
Yeah, I was like, wow.
So would you guys say that that game right there was when Utah arrived as a real Pac-12 contender?
The Hay's never in the barn.
Yeah, no. Hay's never in the barn. That is
never in the barn.
Forever drilled in our brains. But obviously it was a huge game. Like, Oregon has always been a tough component. You know, you hear about Oregon every single year being tough, and, you know, being a top contender in the Pac-12. So like, that was a sweet victory, especially after, you know, junior year when they came in, when they came to play us, and we had that little mishap on the goal line with Kalen, but we won't get into that. We would have been up
14-0. We're able to laugh about it now.
We would have been up 14-0, and that would have been the first time any team has ever gone up on Oregon 14-0. But
yeah,
well, they had a pretty good quarterback too.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna lie. The first play of the game.
I remember the very first play. He ran like a zone read, and yes, he kept and ran for like 6 yards. I was like, oh boy.
I was like, it's gonna be a long day.
Oh boy.
Having that game our senior year was definitely good, a little revenge, and like I said, all three phases just clicked that game. It worked out so well.
I have
a funny story about that Oregon game when Kalen dropped it on the 1 yard line. So it's me, Tim, and Kalen in the end zone. We celebrating like a mug. We didn't know the play was continuously going. And so Coach Stubblefield ran off the field, right? Ran from the sideline all the way to the field. But we're like, Coach, what are you talking about? We just scored a touchdown. Like, we over here tapping fans. Oh. I'm like, what's up? And then he come on the field, like, literally, and we just look like,
I literally remember I was walking over to the sideline, and then I just see Oregon players running the opposite way with the football, and I'm like,
Do you have that clip at all?
I don't actually have that one. Well, I could probably pull it up on.
No, you're good. I remember running from
you don't
the trap. Trap throws a bomb of a dime, and I dab trap, and I'm like slow fat man jogging down the end zone, celebrating, and then they start running toward us. Like, the guy who picked the ball up starts running toward me, and I'm like, he runs past me like this, and I just keep running towards the end zone. Turn around, and then they blow the whistle, touchdown on the other end, and I was like,
"Yeah, I didn't even understand that moment at all."
But I got in so much trouble at film that day. The next day,
me too.
You did? Let the whistle blow. I thought it was. I couldn't hear anything. The crowd was going nuts.
Oh man.
So then you guys then move up into the rankings. You guys go from 18. Going into that Oregon game, you guys shoot all the way up to number 5 in the entire country. Then you guys have College Game Day coming to town, which I think's only happened, I think, 2 other times in Utah history, to where they like, come to Salt Lake.
Yeah, the last time was like, what, 2000?
I think it was the BYU. TCU, right? It was either the TCU game or the BYU.
TCU.
I
think
about that TCU game. I remember I was on the sideline on crutches in that game. That was the most – Yeah,
that
was crazy.
Yeah, that game sucked.
Well, yeah, we're not gonna talk about that memory yet. We're gonna pour some salt in the wound here in just a few minutes. But first, I want to talk about the Cal game. Jared Goff goes on to be the number one pick in the draft. You guys are hosting Cal, who's ranked number 23 at the time. Jared Goff threw what, like 5 picks?
Six
in the first half. 6 picks.
Six.
5 of them were what in the first half. So Travis, when we talk about the USC game coming up, your game on that won't have anything. on Jared Goff's game against you guys, right?
Yeah.
So just going into that game, all of that hype with College Game Day. By the way, what is it like getting ready for a game when College Game Day is in town?
Business as usual.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Business as usual.
You guys can tell me now. You guys aren't, you know, on the team. You guys can tell me the real feeling. Was there any extra nerves? Was it – I mean, what was it?
Like, I don't really think there's really any extra nerve. Just
more excitement.
Yeah, it was more excitement. It was like, obviously, it was an awesome opportunity, and it was an awesome experience to be part of, you know, College Game Day. You know, you grow up watching College Game Day every Saturday morning and stuff like that. So it was it was cool to see like our team on there, and you know, we worked hard for it, and we definitely earned to be that game. So it was, like I said, just an awesome opportunity, and you know, we wanted to take advantage of that.
And that's why in the beginning I said, man, everything's just panning out. Like, first the drive wanted to see us, and then we beat Michigan, then we're going to beat Oregon, then this college game. Then I'm like, oh shoot, this is gonna be crazy this year. So, man,
it was lit, man. It was fun.
And then you guys go on to be ranked number 4 in the country, and then you guys take on the Arizona State Sun Devils. You guys won 34-18 at home, which it was against a team you guys have struggled with since joining the Pac-12. So it was probably good to get a win over the Sun Devils.
What's that blitz they always run, bro? And they run two off the edge. What's that called, Trav?
Smack.
Yeah, smack.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think, while we were there, I don't think we had beaten Arizona State until our senior year. So,
I don't think so.
So that was obviously a big game as well, too.
Going back to Cal quickly, I heard a story. I guess Jared Goff came and found Coach Scally, the D coordinator, and after the game, and was like, hey, what defense were you guys running? Because he couldn't figure it out, right? He threw 6 picks. And I guess Utah, and I kind of wish we had someone on the defensive side of the ball, but I guess Utah was just running cover 2, and Jared Goff couldn't figure it out. I was like, what? Like, mind blown.
The other teams in the league.
Man.
To run a cover 2 and to get 6 picks off of him?
Yeah.
We had some baller, bro. Damo.
I covered 2.
Yeah.
We got Reggie.
I was friends with Jared in like college and stuff. And then obviously I spent a little time with them when I was with on the Rams as well. So
yeah.
I definitely like bringing up that moment. So just, you know, just to have a little mm-hmm. edge over him. So.
Well, and then someone who ends up having an edge over you is the game we're going to go to next. When you guys were ranked number 3 in the entire country, Cameron Smith and the USC Trojans. We're going to start with Kenneth Scott here. Obviously, the college football world's looking at you guys. Number 3 in the entire country, going over to USC at the Coliseum, where Utah hasn't played well since joining the Pac-12. I mean, obviously, they do pretty well at home against USC. But just going into that game, were you guys feeling pretty good about yourselves?
Man, I know I was. I was like, okay, this man, we number 3. We about to – I thought we was going to win that game. I mean, we didn't – it was like, what was the first quarter score? About 14 for what was it? What was the
I can tell you here in a minute.
I was feeling good for the most part of the game. I said, like, okay, we're still in here.
You know, you guys were up by one touchdown, 14 to 7.
That's me. With Brittany Covey,
you went loose.
30-yard touchdown catch from Travis in that first quarter.
I was feeling good. I thought we was gonna really win that game, and then after that, it was just like a blur to me.
So Isaac, what happened in that game? I mean, you guys had all the hype coming in surrounding you. The Trojans weren't ranked.
I remember in the locker room before that game, and Coach E was walking around, LSI, he was walking around and just being like, you guys get to go home today after this game and tell your kids that you beat USC in the Coliseum. Like, that is a big deal. Like, that is a legendary stadium. USC is a legendary team. And I remember just being so hyped. And I had 100% belief that we were going to – ball out and win that game, man. But it all declined, and I don't blame Trav at all. I know he'll talk about that too, but just it was one of those things that, in my honest opinion of the 2015 season, our biggest downfall was the hype that we just couldn't handle it. We didn't handle it the right way. There was so much hype and it was every week the hype just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think our confidence was replaced by not necessarily cockiness, but just the fact that we kind of lost sight of why we were having so much success. And then, sadly, that game, when things were going bad, a lot of it was, without saying names, everybody just kind of turned on each other. I mean, everybody was just kind of at each other's throats and being like, well, why aren't you guys doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And it kind of unraveled from there. But there was just so many different things that happened, and it wasn't just one thing, you know. I said Travis talked about it here, but it wasn't Travis's interceptions. It was just there was so much adversity that we weren't used to. We hadn't seen all season, that we didn't know how to react to it. especially from an O-line point. I think Favre got sacked like 8 or 9 times.
So. Well, and you know, for Travis too to have to get sacked that many times, he's a guy who's very mobile, who's able to use his feet, and you know, so kind of like of what Tyler Huntley's done lately at Utah, where he's able to get out of the pocket and you know avoid sacks. Travis was able to do that too and able to run. He was just a lot taller than Tyler Huntley, but Travis, you know, going into that game, obviously I'm only messing with you. You know, it's 5 years later, we can joke about it now. But going into that game, you were obviously having a really good year. What was going on in that game going into the Coliseum?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like we were having good. I was playing well and stuff like that. And, you know, I think I definitely tried to force the ball a few too many times and, you know, tried to make more plays than more, you know, out of character plays than I should have. And, you know, at the end of the day, like till the day I die, I will take full responsibility for, you know, how I played that game and the outcome of that game as well too. I will always own up to that, and I'll always you know, be a man of my word, and I can see or I can own that I did not play well that game, and it's unfortunate, and obviously made some bad mistakes throwing the ball as well, and ended up throwing it to this freaking same guy on their team a few times. So, but yeah, I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, you know, I just, like I said, just tried to make too many plays, you know, outside of, what I should have just been doing. And like I said, I always own up to that. And I always take full responsibility for that. Because, you know, as a quarterback, that's your job to, be a man and, you know, be the leader of that offense. And, you know, as a quarterback, the ball's in your hand every single play. So it's your job to be smart with it and take care of it. And you know, that game, I just wasn't able to take care of the football. And, you know, my coach Witt was always saying, you know, you're not going to win a lot of games if you don't win the turnover margin. So, and that was a big part of that game. So.
I remember a few days before the game, they came out with the USC favored. And I remember the locker room. I mean, that was basically what everybody was talking about. And at first, I was quite irritated. But then I thought it was going to work in our advantage, you know, because I did feel like the team was starting to get a bit away from itself, maybe lose some of the concentration we had earlier in the season. But then when we weren't favored, despite being number 3 in the country, you know, I thought that was enough. I thought that was all the motivation we needed. There's something about that stadium, I'm telling you. And what Isaac said, I mean, I'm on the sideline a lot, so I can talk about what happened on the sideline. I mean, it was straight panic mode. You know, there weren't very many cool kids on that sideline. It was chaotic, and that was the first time that entire year that I had seen it like that, and that was concerning. And it was pretty early on, too, when things started not going our way early in that first quarter. You could tell there was this eeriness about the Utah sideline, and it wasn't fun.
You guys go on to beat Oregon State and Washington, mm-hmm. and then you lose two games that you probably could have won. You know, you guys lost in double overtime down in Tucson against the Wildcats, and then you lost by 8 points at home against UCLA. What was kind of behind those two losses? I mean, I know the one in double overtime was tough. It came down to the wire. But Kenneth Scott, talk about how was the team feeling after those two losses?
For me, I was like, you can't be serious. Like, we go from, number 3 to now we're fighting for the Pac-12 South, like, to be representatives of it. I'm like, what in the world? Like, where did this come to? And so I was like, dang. So for me, just thinking about those moments, I was like, okay, how are we going to be able to regroup and get this thing right back into, you know, our control like it's been, this whole season? And so I wanted to win that Arizona game so bad because I don't think we beat Arizona since my redshirt freshman year up in Tucson when they had Nick Foles. And was it Nick Foles that they quarterback at that time, my redshirt freshman year when we played at Tucson?
I think Foles was a little bit earlier. I'm not 100% sure.
Two, So it was some of it was another must have been another quarterback then. It was a prominent quarterback that went to the NFL. Mm-hmm. But I think that was the last time my redshirt freshman when we went nuts. And then we went to UCLA, and then we lost to UCLA. I was like, what in the world? And it was just – well, no, no. That UCLA game was BS. All right. Because there was one play that would have changed everything. I'm gonna
tell was you that the block in the back?
Yes. I looked at it like, hold on. He missed the block. And – that pissed me off because, you know, me, that's like 50-some yards. That's a touchdown off my stat record. Like, I damn near have more PIs than touchdowns. Yo, like, let me get this. Like, let me get this. I need this stat. Like, but I think that call kind of shifted a little bit. That was bogus. I mean, we didn't end up scoring a touchdown on that drive, I don't think. But yeah, man, those moments was crazy. Both of those losses, because now you go from – You go from going to the top to now you fighting for a Pac-12 South spot. So that's crazy.
We're going to skip over the Colorado game because you guys won that game. Now, you guys finished the regular season 9-3, and then you guys find out that BYU, or TDS, as Travis likes to call it, you guys are playing them in the Las Vegas Bowl. So for a team that had 9 wins, you guys were ranked number 3, but then end up getting to the point where with only 3 losses, you draw BYU in the Las Vegas Bowl. Tom Hackett, I'm going to start with you on this one. Your initial thoughts when you guys found out you guys are going to be playing BYU in the Las Vegas Bowl?
I will never forget the team meeting when we were all in there. We had already found out that we were playing BYU, I believe. They announced it earlier that day or the day. And it was such a weird feeling, and the team was so aggravated, but nobody was really willing to speak on it because you kind of got to be careful. Coach Witt, you know, he takes every opponent seriously, but it was like one of the only times I could tell Coach Witt was so aggravated by the bowl matchup. And I remember in special teams meeting, before we went down to Vegas, the specialists got together and played a prank on Coach Witt, and it was one of the funnier things I can remember up there at Utah. But we told him that he had a lunch scheduled. It was in one of the local newspapers that we read that he and his wife, Jamie, had to go have lunch with Bronco and his wife. And it was at Caesar, and it was a public lunch, and they were going to be on a podium, and the media was invited, and they were going to be able to take photos and ask questions at the end of it. And when we told him that, he's like, I have not heard about this. I heard about it. And he was so angry. His face went red. And, boy, we started laughing our head, messing with him. We told him, Coach, we're joking. He's like, okay, good. But for a minute there, we were dying laughing. Wow. Him and Bronco didn't get along that well. And so, boy, that was funny. That kind of made it all worth it for me. But I know the whole coaching staff. I know the entire playing group, everybody involved in the program. Really irritated. It was the second year in a row we went back to Las Vegas. We won 9 games. We didn't end as well as we would have liked. But I think we were Holiday Bowl bound, Alamo Bowl bound. I mean, I just think if you look at the Vegas Bowl ranks in the list of Pac-12 bowl games, I mean, I think if I'm
like sixth,
second to last or something, it's down there. And
Sun Bowl, I believe, is the last one.
I would rather go to Bowl than go to the Sun Bowl.
Yeah, granted, I'd rather go to Vegas than the Sun Bowl, but it was disappointing, but. I mean, it was a full stadium, and that was kind of cool. And it was BYU. I mean, like, it wasn't the end of the world. I just would have liked a different experience. You know, Travis and I started in 2012. We ended in 2015. We got 2 bowl games, and we got 2 Las Vegas bowl rings that I donated to the dump.
You threw yours away?
I don't know where they are.
Yeah, mine are collecting dust.
Yeah, mine's in the corner.
I remember
finding out that we were going to go to the Vegas Bowl, because I remember we were supposed to go. What bowl were we supposed to go to? I don't know if you talked about that or not. Like, it was like,
was it the one in California?
Yeah,
I think we should have went to the Holiday Bowl down in San Diego.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I honestly think that we got screwed over because it was basically like, well, BYU is going to go to the Vegas Bowl. We might as well try to get Utah to the Vegas Bowl. So let's take the other teams to the other bowl games, and we'll take Utah to the Vegas Bowl to play BYU. And
I think two big factors played into like us going to that Vegas Bowl. It was one, I think they wanted to see the rivalry game happen. And two, they knew our fans would travel to the game because it was decently close. So
it's all money.
Yeah. So they knew fans were going to come to the game. They knew it was going to be a big game. So I think those kind of two factors definitely played heavily into that decision too.
But it was, regardless of not being able to go to a better game, a bowl game, that was still one of the funnest bowl games I've ever been to, just because, one, it's Vegas, it's against BYU, and we smoked them. So,
well, you guys were smoking them until BYU came back.
I don't care if they came back or not. We smoked them. We won. I don't care.
Yeah, it still says a W on the stat.
It does. I'm looking at it right now. You guys probably know what happened in that pep rally when your boy Tom Hackett went up on that stage and said some. Huh?
Can I tell that story?
Absolutely. Floor is yours.
I was not meant to go up on that stage.
Really?
Nobody trusted me with that microphone.
Do you think we trust Tom to go up and talk for the team?
No, I don't. What happened? Andy was going up because, you know, Andy, he loves the bloody attention. And he's like, Tom, can you come? Can you come with me? I'm like, Andy, I'll come, but I ain't talking, man. He's like, anyway, so we get there and it's Stubblefield, RIP Coach Stubb. Where's
he? And, he's still alive, I think.
And it's Andy. I know, I'm just teasing. He's doing today. But we play a game of horse with a water bottle, an empty water bottle and a trash can. And Andy's like, if I beat you, you got to come up and say something. If you win, you don't have to. And anyway, I tried to go full Joe Ingles on it. I ended up going full Dante Exum, and I couldn't take a bucket. And I had to go up there. And so I didn't have anything prepared, man. I mean, it was like I had like 2 minutes to come up with something to say, and that was as good as it got for me. So,
man, it was good.
Moral of the story, don't put Tom on the spot.
Don't do it.
So, Travis, Isaac, Kenneth, when you guys saw that and you guys saw Tom say what he said about BYU, obviously it fired up the crowd. It fired up the team. What were you guys' thoughts when Tom said those wonderful words to BYU?
Hey, can you relay it back? Can you, Tom?
I don't know if I can or should. Dude, I don't let Tom.
I was so nervous.
Can we watch
on the car ride home? On the car ride home, I remember like sweating and being like, I sweat a lot. And Andy's like, I'm like, Andy, I wasn't even scared of Whit. I was scared of Rudy, man. I thought big Rudy was going to take my medal. And I get back to the hotel and Rudy's dying laughing when he sees me and Coach Whit's with him. And I just give Coach Whit a bones and go right back to my room.
So Coach Whit was all right with it?
He was fine with it.
I think it was because it was a rivalry. That's why it wasn't that big of a deal. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. Anything you can say to disrespect that school is, and I'd take it any day of the week.
And by the way, Tom's message to BYU in that pep rally is now the name of the podcast he hosts. It's Utah's World. The only thing that isn't on there, and BYU's living in it, is the only thing that really isn't in there. But I will say you guys went up 35-0 on them. I mean, Travis, was this? I mean, I know a lot of it came off a turnover. Actually, all of them came off a turnover. So you had short field every single possession in that first quarter. But when you guys go up 35-0, are you having that feeling of Oregon all over again?
Yeah. Like I said, our defense was playing great. The defense was getting the ball back for us, and we were making good plays on offense and everything like that, and yeah, we definitely had that mindset over again. I think that's when we got a little complacent and kind of got a little reserved. And I mean, obviously, it clearly showed because they started to come back and stuff. And had to freaking pretty much make up for it at the end. But you know, I personally felt like we kind of let off the gas a little bit, and that was frustrating. And that it gave them a chance to come back a little bit.
It went from feeling like an Oregon game to
game.
Yeah. I was nervous because I wasn't even planning on playing that game. Well, because I was injured after the Colorado game until they stuck a big old long needle about the size of this. My camera's all messed up, but like this. Like, and it allowed me to play. You know, you take something so strong, you got to sign off for it. That's what I did. I
could have like blitz the league, bro.
Yeah, man, I couldn't feel my toes. I said, dang, it was the craziest, most wonderful feeling I've ever felt in my life. I couldn't feel nothing. I felt like, literally, I felt like a real-life superhero. Like, I couldn't feel anything. And so I'm like, okay. So going through the game, I'm like, man, I just want to get through it, to be honest, just to get through with the game. So when we was winning by a lot, I said, good, good. Now I can just chill. Like, and then when they start coming back, I said, holy shoot, what's going on here? And so I think it made it good, man. It was a good little memorable moment.
Travis, you had mentioned prior to hopping on here that you had a little story from that Vegas Bowl. It was like the day before.
Yeah, no, it was actually the night before. I don't know. Maybe it's a little TDS feeling or a little. I have a little conspiracy theory about it. But so me and Connor Manning, one of the backup QBs, we were rooming together. And we actually get woken up at like 2 a.m. from a phone call. This dead true story. And I get the room above our room at the hotel, their shower was actually leaking and it leaked into our shower. And so we actually had to pack up all of our stuff out of our room at like 2 a.m. and move to a different room. And I remember we were like half asleep and didn't know like what was going on. And I don't know if that was a little doing on TDS's part, but I remember I was fighting. I was like, what the heck is going on? It was, of course, something like this would happen the night before we play a rivalry game. So, but full on, it was just, we get woken up at 2 a.m. We had to switch rooms. I had to do all that. And it was a weird timing.
That is very weird timing, especially for the quarterback's room.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of want to just end on this. There's two questions I want to ask you guys, and then I'll cut you guys loose. And you guys have been very gracious with your time, and I really appreciate it. Thoughts on the 2020 Utah football team? We know it's going to be conference only, 10-game schedule, but they had a really good year last year. Could have potentially gone to the college football playoff, and they lose a lot of guys from last year. But thoughts on this year's Utah football team is it's a really young team. Isaac, we'll start with you.
I honestly think Utah's either at that point or just about at that point where they just reload. I mean, I know they have a lot of young guys, but the young guys that they're getting now are better than the young guys than when I was coming in. I mean, even when I came in, it was a select few. You know what I mean? And I feel like the type of talent that Utah's attracting now with how well they've been doing, those guys that are young now are better than some of the 2-3 year guys we had back in the day. It's just more experience and trying to figure out the playbook. But the coaching staff up there, they know what they're doing. I think they'll be fine. Obviously, they'll be growing pains because the experience and the speed of play is different. But like I said, Utah's attracting far and better talent than they were, 10 years ago when I first got here.
That's crazy. You said 10 years ago because 10 years ago I was a freshman. That's crazy. To think
time flies, guys.
God, duh. I still remember my freshman year when Travis had came. Well, my redshirt freshman year when Travis had came and just came.
Yeah, I'm with that.
That's
Travis came and visited us in practice.
God, damn. Yeah.
All right, Scott, thoughts on this 2020 team?
Oh, I agree with Isaac, man. It's crazy. You know, we have a lot of talent, and like it's always been, it's just a matter of how we're going to utilize it. We can have all the talent in the world, but if we ain't going to utilize it, what's the purpose of them? And so I just think that if we align, our schemes and our playbooks and our plays with, with our talent, the sky's the limit for what we can do, to be honest with you. We have the talent. Now let's just go ahead and utilize them in the correct way to maximize their abilities to get us to where we need to be. And so I can't complain about what we have. We have a great group of guys, so let's utilize them.
Travis played with somebody who's currently on that team. What was thrown to him, Britton Covey. He's obviously going to be a leader this year, but they're also having to find a new quarterback after Tyler Huntley graduated.
Yeah. I definitely know there's some good guys there right now, competing for the spot and everything like that. And, I hope I hope they have a good, you know, I hope the quarterbacks have a good relationship. Like I said, I mean, I like with me and Kendall Thompson, like me and him, obviously we both wanted to play and I ended up getting the spot, but that never put like a damper on mine and Kendall's relationship. We always had a good relationship. We always helped each other out. We were always there for each other. So I hope that can be the same for these quarterbacks going through that process. And, you know, I hope whoever the starting quarterback is, you know, I hope they can ride with him and have faith with him that he's going to get the job done. And, you know, that definitely plays a big part in, you know, the confidence that the quarterback has and everything like that. So, like I said, I hope I know the quarterback will rise out of this situation. And, you know, I'm excited to see who it is. And, you know, it's next man up and you got to step up and be that leader of that team. So, like I said, I'm excited to see what happens there. And, you know, I think a big thing, too, I think Utah has definitely solidified themselves as being a team to a force to be reckoned with in the Pac-12. You know, we always took pride in, you know, being the most physical team out there. You know, there was always times head coaches would come up after the game and, you know, would always comment on how physical we were and, you know, how, you know, we played till that final whistle. So I hope that trend continues. And you know, I'm hoping they'll have a season this year. We'll see what happens with everything. Obviously it's a weird time right now with everything going on, but you know, I'm hoping the players are staying healthy and coaches are staying healthy. And I hope they can, you know, have a healthy season and have a season at the end of the day.
Tom, you know a lot about the team as well, having covered them right now for us over at KSLsports.com. And it's going to be a very different season, just not only playing conference only, but with obviously some new faces. Obviously, the specialists are back, which is a good thing. Still a lot of new faces.
A lot of new faces. I think the strength of the team right now lies on the receivers. It's going to be fun to watch them make play after play, hopefully, and carry a lot of that load, which I'm excited for Utah to sling it around. But they're young, and everybody knows that they're young. And so I think anytime you have an inexperienced group, you're going to rely on a few more lucky breaks than maybe what you would rely on with a more senior driven group. They're going to need some breaks. There's no doubt about it. They're inexperienced and they'll get better as the season goes. But a fast start and a strong start, you know, that could take a long way. And the schedule that was announced last week, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's favorable. And I think there's a chance Utah go 5-0 or 4-1. But regardless, you know, confidence is kind of a wild thing in college football with these young. The momentum you can gain, it's quite powerful. So I'm certainly optimistic, but there's no doubt that they're young and going to be fascinating to see them grow throughout the course of the season.
Oh, real quick, Tom, what is it like interviewing the coaches now, being a former player of theirs? Like, what is it like?
It's weird, man. It's really weird because I got to be really careful with, like, the information I'm given. I think early on I would receive information and I'd just share the information with everybody. And then I'd get a call from Rudy and have to go into the office and explain myself to Coach Witt. And I'm like, horses, I'm not a player anymore. I shouldn't have to apologize to, even though I made a mistake. So nowadays, or, you know, Trevor's kind of the Utah insider and I let him do his thing and I help out here and there, but it's weird, man. I mean, it's fun, don't get me wrong, but I got to put a professional face on, and then when the interview's done, I kind of share some laughs and hang out, but it's not as cool as I thought it was going to be.
What about, like, coming over to the media side of it? Coming over to the dark side, Tom?
Yeah, it's fun. It's not as fun as I thought it was going to be.
It is. Like interviewing players, like, hey, how was the game? Man, you know how the game was. It was complete butt.
Exactly. All right. Final thing, and we're going to end on this. the Pac-12 student athletes came out with some demands for the conference, and it's starting to spread, you know, college football wide. With the Big Ten has a movement, the Mountain West just announced a movement. They're wanting demands for their conference, including half of the conference revenue, health and safety protocols, scholarship stuff. I'm sure you guys have already seen those listed demands, but just talk about your overall thoughts on it. I mean, you guys can go in whatever direction you would like. Isaac, I want to start with you on this as a guy who's been a leader for this team and just seeing this type of movement.
I think a lot of the things on their demands are great. At the same time, there's just a whole different spectrum of things where it's like they kind of – it's give and take. Like, you can't have 50% of the revenue. That's my personal opinion. You take away from other sports. That's really selfish. But then at the same time, I understand they're just trying to get paid. I never was an advocate for players to get paid, make money off your life, but sure. But mine was I just wanted more money to live every month. I mean, after paying rent, and even when I was married, we probably had like $200-$300. Like, and then you guys figure out. Even in the early days, like when K-Stop first came in and I came in after, like, it was like, all right, well, do I want to have my bills paid this month or do I want to have food for the rest of the month? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's where I come from a perspective of pay. When it comes to social equality, racial equality, I'm all for it. Like, those are things that they shouldn't even have to fight for those things. You know what I mean? And the fact that they feel that they need to is a problem. I think that those things need to be addressed first and foremost. But there's just a bunch of things where if you're going to – like what happened from Washington State, with those players, they got booted from the team for being a part of that. And all the guys who got booted were threatening to not play the season. And but now they're upset that they got booted. I mean, from a coach's standpoint, I see things that if you're not going to be here for the team, then I get it. Then you got to go. But from a player's standpoint – I understand what they're fighting for. It's hard for me to really say, you know, exactly what I feel on the whole demands and their what they're wanting. I always the athlete before everybody else because I get how that feels. But there's a lot of different things in the demands that it's not realistic to happen. What's that guy? Fotheringham, his dad tweeted out.
Yeah.
An amazing thread and just expounding on points that I think that it should honestly be revived for the way that he get together because there were so many points that were made by him. But like I said, I'm all for getting everything that you can and want, but understand that there's different outcomes, different repercussions for things that you want to do. And sadly, some of the times it'll end you not being on the team anymore.
Travis, you know Cole Fotheringham, right?
Yeah, I know. Cole went to the same high school as me, and obviously he's younger than me, but yeah, we always knew each other and stuff like that. And yeah, like I said, he grew up in the same city as me, so.
Kenneth Scott, thoughts on this movement that the Pac-12 players are doing, and now obviously other conferences are jumping in on it too.
Yeah, I agree with Isaac, because like literally word for word what he said about, you know, with the social inequality, the pay, and all that, and just make sure everything is healthy. I'm assuming Utah is doing everything that they can to help in that case, which is a great news. But it sucks, man. Like, you're fighting for something and you get booted off. But just like Isaac said, it's two sides of the coin, and I understand both of them. And so it's a crazy position to be in. But for me, I love football. Like, I just love it. Me personally, I would have played. I just love football, you know. And then within me playing, I would just made a statement, you know, just like people make statements nowadays. Like when Brandon Marshall was trying to fight mental health stigma, he had green cleats. You know, that was his way of, you know, saying this is what he stood for. And so I guess you can try to figure out ways how you can do both at the same time, you know, play, but still, you know, have something that you wear or represent on the field that shows you, you know, what you represent. And so I think those are some ways that they can still do it to, you know, make their point and still, you know, hold the end of the bargain of, you know, the coach's view as well. And so, but the racial stuff, I think, you know, it's just like Isaac said, you know, it goes to be, you know, be said. And so the health stuff, just make sure that they're doing everything that they can to protect the players. And then, yeah, the revenue, that was crazy. I was like, man, that was crazy.
I don't blame them for trying to go for the moon, you know what I mean? But at the same time, they got to be realistic. That's not ever going to happen.
Yeah, for real. But the name, image, and likeness, you know, it's a great tool for sure. Because some people have that privilege that can get that type of extra commission. But then there's some people that, you know, may not be as lucky, and that can divide a locker room. Because I was speaking with Matt Martinez and a couple other guys about it too, and they shared their points of it from, okay, the star players or the people that are well known, and what about the other players that may feel, you know, out of it and left out? And so you're just trying to figure out the middle ground to appease both sides. And so that one's going to be tough because obviously it's going to be pointed to the people that are, you know, have the most stardom. But then the other people don't recognize, I mean, there's so much politics that go into, you know, you playing and things of that nature. You know, there's some great athletes that just don't bond with the coach, and that's the reason why they're not playing, you know, and that can affect their name, image, and likeness, you know, from a commission standpoint. And so you just got to find the middle ground and try to appease both sides, which is hard to do. But I like the players that are fighting for it. That's pretty cool to see. They're trying to change the landscape of the college football outlet. Especially with the NCAA making billions of dollars off of us.
Tom, you look like you're going to fall asleep. I'm going to turn it over to you for your thoughts on this Pac-12 movement. I know that you've stated on our website. You've also stated in other areas on Twitter and things like that your thoughts. But for this audience, your thoughts on this Pac-12 movement.
I'm all about power to the players. I think college football without the players isn't college football. Coach Whittingham, the rest of the coaches don't make the money they do without the players.
Mm-hmm.
Players need more. I do think that there's a fine line between how much they get, how much they don't get, star players versus no star players. And we could spend a lot of time talking about it. But at the end of the day, I think what they're doing is cool. I don't think they're getting 50%, but it's a good negotiating on their end. You know, you got to start somewhere. And once you start somewhere, and if you give up whatever your starting point is, you're never going to get that back. So start high, come down low. Maybe they get 0%, you know, who knows. But if they can get something out of it, so be it. I'm all about power to the players. And I think college football is a player-run system. And I think the players do the vast majority of the hard work to put the product on the field. And so I'm all about that. And right now it's college coaches that kind of run the system, and they make the decisions, and they claim that it's player-run programs, but I would beg to differ. And so I would like to see more power to the players. But that's, I mean, look, it's really tricky because we're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. So, you know, they can't have too much power because some of the decisions they want probably aren't the best decisions for the best interest of the sport and the game. So, you know, it's a very delicate situation. Every other league, professional league, has a players association. College football doesn't. Maybe that's where we start.
Mm-hmm.
Get some of the brightest minds in the game together to help negotiate certain elements. But I'm all about it. I like it.
Travis, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, piggyback off of like what everyone said. Obviously, it's a tough situation because, yeah, I mean, you want to make it fair for everyone, and because everybody on the team has a role. Like, we as a starting offense would not be prepared if we didn't have a scout team to go against during practice each week.
Yep.
We would not be where we needed to be if we didn't have guys like that. So it is a tricky situation because you want it to be fair for everyone. Obviously, you know, like walk-ons and stuff like that, you know, they're busting their butt. They're not getting any money, and they're, you know, trying to earn a scholarship and everything like that. So, and they're working, they're doing everything we're doing. So I always had really high praise for walk-ons and everything like that, just because, you know, they're doing everything we are, and you know, they're not really getting anything in return. So and like I said earlier, you know, it's a crazy time right now, obviously, with the pandemic going on and all the social injustice things going on right now too. So I mean, it's a good time, especially for, you know, college athletes to come together and to work together. I've always been like a big advocate, especially, you know, I wish everyone could have experienced, especially, you know, the Utah locker room and the football team that we had, because at the end of the day, we had no problems with any of that kind of stuff. You know, no matter where somebody came from, what color skin they had, anything like that, you know, what religious beliefs they had, everyone respected each other. Everyone was, you know, had the same goal in mind. And, mm-hmm. you know, I wish everyone could experience that, because it was, like I said, it was something we didn't have to go through. That was never a topic that would ever be brought up. And that was never something that ever came into question, because everybody truly cared about everyone. Everyone respected everyone. So obviously I wish more people could experience that, because it is truly a grateful thing. And, you know, I wish, you know, after all this, you know, I hope people's voices are being heard, and I hope changes are being made, because there's definitely a lot of things that need to be changed and need to be addressed. And I think a lot of players are stepping up and, you know, having that voice and, you know, demanding those changes. And, you know, yeah, obviously it'd be nice, you know, be compensated, like, and be able to get, you know, a little extra for what we do. But at the same time, you know, I also too, I'm not going to take away that we also got our whole education paid for free. So that was, I would never take that for granted whatsoever. You know, Coach Witt always said, you know, we're there first to get our education, and football is second to that. So at the end of the day, you know, I'm grateful I was able to have my college education taken care of. And I know that was a big, that was something that I wanted to help out my parents, so they didn't have to deal with that. So at the end of the day, I don't want that, this whole, you know, you know, getting money for likeness and all that to take away from, you know, the real purposes of why you got a scholarship and why you're going to college in the first place. Because at the end of the day, football, like we all know here, football is not going to last forever, and you're going to have to do something once football is over. So you want to make sure you put yourself in the best situation you can when that time does come.
Trev, before we get out of here, can I just quickly say, and sorry to cut you off, Case Scott, I'll let you go after. Wear your masks, love each other, and support positive social change like the Black Lives Matter movements. Okay, it's important, I think, for people to be reminded of that. I love all you guys. Case Scott, the floor's yours.
But that's crazy. I was about to tag on to that, because, you know, what Travis said was awesome, because, you know, there was one point in time, it was during a fall camp, and the coaches divided everybody up into different, you know, ethnic groups. Like you have different groups, but they all had like a white, black, different diversity within the group. And after the late end of the camp, you have a representative talking, so you can get to know you session, and everybody will talk about their background, where they came from, you know, so everybody can understand, you know, what that person goes through, and kind of get a deeper dive, especially if you're trying to portray that you're a brotherhood. You know, we actually took those steps within our program to, you know, create diversity, to have that attachment with each, you know, of the players. And so, like Travis said, I think our program was like one of the better programs in regards to that, you know, having everybody truly like a brother. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, poly, everything. And I think that was truly one of the beneficial factors of our Utah program, why we are where we are.
Well, guys, obviously you guys have been very gracious with your time. I have thoroughly enjoyed the last hour and change going through time. That was a very special year for the Utes, and really a stepping stone to what the program is now. I really do appreciate you guys sharing your stories, talking about, you know, the best of times, the worst of times from that season. So obviously I really do appreciate you guys. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Can we also add that we need more police officers like Isaac?
Yeah.
Yes, we do. Thanks, bro.
All right, guys, that will do it for this edition. A big thank you to our sponsor, University Federal Credit Union. And make sure you guys check out kslsports.com. See you guys.